Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. It is Tuesday, April 7th, 2026. Hope everybody's doing well, and here we go, gearing up for another series in the Bronx. So the Sacramento A's are in town for a three-game set. And if I'm not mistaken, we will be seeing Luis Severino in the Bronx first time since not being a Yankee. Of course, 2023 was his final year with us. Goes to the Mets, was pretty damn good there. Has since signed that three-year deal with the A's, and I believe we faced him. I'm not sure if we faced him in 2024 at the Mets, but if I'm not mistaken, we faced him in Sacramento last year. But this will be his first time back in the Bronx, which will be pretty cool, and he should get a nice ovation. Time flies. Time really does freaking fly, man. Between Michael Kay bringing up that Giancarlo Stanton year nine as a Yankee, that's insane. Luis Severino, I mean, the dude's well past 30 now. Even seeing Preston Claiborne out in the bullpen, which for the younger fans who don't know, Preston Claiborne, he was a pitcher on the Yankees in like 2013. And it's just like, not to be cliche and say that feels like yesterday, but I remember being 13 years old watching Preston Claiborne come up and thinking, this kid looks pretty good, man. He might be something. Next thing you know, he's only with us for like a year and a half, and then now he's our pitching coach, and he looks completely different. Shout out Preston Claiborne. Anyways, shout out to you guys, everybody in the chat that is tuning in live. Of course, we're also available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we'll have a watch party tonight on the main channel. It'll be a 7 o'clock start, and I think we should get going with that series preview, and then we'll go into 5 takeaways from the first 2 weeks, 5 early takeaways from the first 2 weeks. And little disclaimer on that, some things that are like obvious takeaways won't be on my list. Like, the starting rotation has been insane. And Cam Sutler's getting the ball tonight in game one. He won't be one of our 5 takeaways. I think we've discussed it a lot, and I also want to just let his third start play out now, and then we'll, no doubt about it, talk about him again soon. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Let's dive into what we got coming tonight. So in game one, which is a 7 o'clock start, tomorrow, Wednesday, is a 7 o'clock start as well. But note, our first Amazon Prime game is tomorrow, so keep that in mind. And then Thursday, series will wrap up, afternoon game at 1:35. But as for tonight's game, yeah, Cam taking the ball, third start. We know he has been absolutely terrific. He's 2-0, has yet to allow a run this season, and he is quickly ascending towards the top of the list of starting pitchers going in baseball right now. And listen, we're going to watch this start tonight, and in all likelihood, I think he's going to pitch pretty damn well. Before we know it, we will have legitimate conversations if this continues to progress the way it has with Cam. And then every indication we've seen is that it's going to. The conversation of him getting Cy Young votes is going to become more and more tangible, but we won't have that conversation right now. We know how great he's been. He'll get the ball for the Yanks tonight in game one. As for the A's starting pitcher, Aaron Civale, a guy we've faced a few times by now, and if you don't remember, we have hit him quite well. And you look at the Yankees' numbers versus Civale in their career. Jazz Chisholm Jr., first of all, he is 3-for-5 off Civale with 2 homers. Ben Rice, just 1 at-bat against Aaron Civale, took him deep for a homer. Judge, in 17 at-bats against Civale, hitting .294 with a homer. Goldschmidt, 7 at-bats, hitting .571 with a homer. Stanton, 2-for-6 with a homer. Guys have hit him really well. Even Ryan McMahon, in 2 at-bats, is 1-for-2 with a double. How about that? Some other notes, Grisham 0-for-4, Bellinger 0-for-8, Rosario 0-for-3. He's a right-handed pitcher. We'll be seeing the standard procedure right-handed lineup, but we've hit him quite well. And this is an important series for the Yankees. Now, I don't want to bring up the Blue Jays again, but it is worthwhile to note that while they're going to turn around eventually, 100% they will, they're too good to keep playing this way. They lost again to the Dodgers last night, and that was a pretty insane game because, of course, that's the first time back in the Rogers Center, the Dodgers, since winning it all there, and they just took it to Toronto, man. And So much so to where Miguel Rojas, who of course hit the game tire in the ninth off Jeff Hoffman in the World Series Game 7, he ends up coming in as a pitching, as a position player pitching in the Rogers Center in a complete bludgeoning of Toronto, 15-2, the Dodgers win. Anyways, the Blue Jays record, let me pull this up exactly. They're now 4-6. Are they going to be an under 500 team? Obviously not. No chance. Are they way better than they've been playing? Of course. Have they been very injury plagued? And losing Alejandro Kirk is, I mean, that's a crusher for Toronto. Eventually, he'll get healthy. Eventually, guys will start to turn it around. They're way better than they've been playing. But let's just say it's the same as it was last year. They're just as good. And we're on the same playing field, the Yankees and the Blue Jays. So it's long term, I think that's completely reasonable to assume that's still going to be the case. Well, if so, consider this a 3.5-game head start. We're 7-2. That is the best record in the American League. We're in first place in the AL East. The next best team is the Tampa Bay Rays. They're 5-5. Long term, I think they're certainly going to be, I was about to say, the bottom dweller of the East, although the Red Sox are 2-6. Let's forget all that. I don't want to go too all in on the standings here, but the point is, consider this a 3.5-game head start over Toronto. Even if we believe Toronto will get back to business, which I do believe that, we got to get fat now while we can. We're playing well. I know Sunday's loss was, relatively speaking, a crusher. And it was. Like that stunk on Sunday. But we're past it now. We flushed that chat. We flushed it. We started a new series tonight. Off day yesterday. We got Cam the bump. Got to win tonight. Got to win this series. But in part just because, hate this word, but vibes. We've really been riding high. And that continued through Sunday's game. When Rice hit the 3-run homer, it's like, oh, man, here we go. We are cruising. Of course, you know how that game finished. And things like that will happen. There's a bad day at the bullpen. Even when you have a bullpen you really trust, bad days like that will happen. It was a wet, sloppy game. I keep saying let's forget about it, but I keep talking about it. My bad. Anyways, until Toronto does eventually turn it around, let's take this time to get fat, yo. Really. We have a 3.5-game head start, like I've been saying, over them already. Let's make that even more. And when it comes to like the rest of the American League, not that we should pay too much attention to seeding the first 2 weeks of the season, but not to keep harping on the same point, but it really is so true and has to be emphasized that these games count just as much as the ones in September when we'll really be stressing about the pennant race and, you know, the postseason race, all this and that. I'm under the impression the Yankees are indeed the best team in the American League. The A's finished the season really strong last year. So far this year, though, they've gotten out of the gate cold. Now, they did win yesterday. They're 3-6 on the season. Their offense has been pretty disappointing, and that's mostly what their team theme pretty much is. If they're going to succeed, it's going to be because of their offense. Their offense hasn't been great so far. Nick Kurtz hasn't been great so far. A lot of the guys that were awesome last year, not just yet, this year. We got Cam in the bump tonight. Will Warren looked really good in his second start of the year against Miami. And then in game three, we got Ryan Weathers. I thought his first start was very promising. Didn't go deep in the game, but I thought he looked good. However, his last outing we know against Miami, he did not look good. This is kind of, while still very early, and he's going to get way more starts. This is the first time with Weathers I'm like, all right, let's see something here. Give me 5 innings, 2 runs. That'll be game three on Wednesday. And we'll be facing Jeffrey Springs, which I just realized I put Spring in the graphic. My apologies on that for those that are watching along on video. Jeffrey Springs, the left-hander, will be going for Sacramento on Thursday. And I'm just wondering what the plan will be catching-wise come the series finale. Now, Austin Wells could play every single day. We had the off day today. But Friday, you know, divisional matchup against Tampa Bay, they might prioritize that series, getting Wells in all three of those games. Do we see J.C. Escara on Thursday? Or is there a world where could we see Ben Rice catch a game this series? I wouldn't bet on that. I still don't feel like that's something the Yankees are looking to do. A little voice crack there, excuse me. But I think if there were a chance early in the season to see Ben Rice get a start at catcher, it would be this series. Again, I still wouldn't bet on it, but knowing that Thursday we're facing a lefty and it's a day game after two night games makes me think it's possible. Now, as for the Yankees bench, I think we'll have this conversation in full right now. I wonder how much longer Scar will be on the roster. It could be the entire season. But the issue does still remain of, it would be nice to have a right-handed backup catcher over J.C. Ascara. Now, we also had the conversation yesterday, which I don't think this will come into play anytime soon, but Jason Mingus, we know, is hitting the ball really well in AAA. And this bench, as we kind of saw the other day, lacks a lefty bat off the bench, and not to mention lacks speed off the bench. I like this Yankee bench a lot, but it's because of the options we have to pinch hit with, and Goldschmidt, Rosario, Grichuk currently one of them as well. I don't think we really need Grichuk, to be honest. And if we're putting the best team available, best team possible on the field right now, which I understand it's not the postseason, you're not necessarily doing, and you want Jason to continue to develop. He has seemingly starting to improve against lefty pitching, batting from the right side. The defense, though, which we'll talk about come the five takeaway segment, has not improved. But the point is, his bat off the bench would make us a better team. His speed off the bench would make us a better team. So we might start to see, whether it's with Jason or will Ascara stay in the roster the entire time, how long will Grichuk's tenure be here? And we know come Friday, Luis Gil's return, which we'll talk about on Thursday's show, come Luis Gil's return on Friday, that will be the end of Cadwin Quest, who, you know, it was over before it even started. We haven't seen him pitch. Maybe we'll see him pitch before he's, whether DFA'd or whatever happens with him on Friday, come Gil's return. This will be the first week we get a little bit of a roster shakeup just from that reason alone. But I'm curious about, going forward, the future of Ascara, or maybe even if the Yankees are, I assume, honestly, they're still looking at, like, backup catchers that might hit the waiver wire, or just options that might come about that, all right, we can jump on that, get a right-handed backup catcher in here. Because in the end, it's tough. Like, Thursday, we're facing Springs, a lefty, day game after two night games. That might be a day, yeah, you want to sit Austin Wells. If you're doing that, sitting down your left everyday left-handed hitting catcher, ideally you have a righty bat off the bench to come in for that day against the lefty starter Springs. For now, that's not the case. That will be the matchup, though, on Thursday. Jeffrey Springs against Ryan Weathers. As for tonight in Cam Schlittler, it's a game the Yankees should win. And while the offense that... I keep saying Oakland, man, but can you blame me? Can you blame me? Sacramento, the offense they have is still very potent. So far, not so much the case. And we know about the star Cam's off to. Yankees should win tonight. I know it's baseball, but they're... I'm not a betting guy, but they're certainly to be favored in this game. And then tomorrow's going to be exciting with, you know, Luis Severino back in the Bronx. I wouldn't be doubtful that there'd be a little, like, video tribute. I think there should be. I think it'll be received really, really well. And I love Sevy. Always rooting for Sevy. And just going back to the whole time flies thing, I remember I went to his first game, his debut in 2015. The Yankees were playing Boston. Although, we didn't get there till like, the sixth inning, but he was still pitching, and he was damn good. He only allowed, I think, like, two runs in six innings. Looked like a totally different guy. Obviously, that's, you know, over 10 years ago now, which is crazy. I was watching some Mark Teixeira highlights last night, watching some 2015 A-Rod highlights. The 2015 season, for what that age, not age, but like, you know, I always consider that the dark ages of my Yankee fandom, which is like the only bit of, I don't know, being a spoiled Yankee fan I still have left in me, because we still won, you know, 84, 85, 84 games during that era. But it was, relatively speaking, I mean, that was a time where not the most exciting brand of Yankee baseball, not the most, you know, box office era to be a Yankee fan. But you got the A-Rod, Teixeira, 2015 renaissance. That was awesome. And then, yeah, Luis Severino comes up. And that was the first time, my first experience with a true legitimate, like, top prospect. Outside of Jesus Montero in 2011, who, of course, we ended up trading for Michael Pineda. Montero was a top prospect, but Sevy was the first instance where it was like, yo, this guy's supposed to be a dude. And he came up, and right away, that's what he was. He was fantastic. And then, you know, 2016 takes a step back, ends up going out of the bullpen. Kind of a lost year, his sophomore season. Then 2017 is where it all started, though. Becomes officially the Yankees' ace very quickly that season. We know he ends up getting the ball game one of the postseason, the wild card. Not to get into everything here, but there was a period, particularly 2017 and 2018, where he was just completely healthy, where he was one of the best starting pitchers in baseball. And it was, at the time, the Yankees nailed it. It was a developed pitching prospect, which we know early on in like the 2010s and that whole era throughout the early part of the 2000s, developing pitching, we were not at the spot that we were at now, where we're just a factory. We're a complete lab. We're turning out guys, you know, like we're making bowel movements. I mean, it's easy for us now, it seems. Knock on wood. Don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But back then it wasn't. And Sevy being the success he was for the first couple of years was awesome. He was one of my favorite pitchers, and I'm sure everybody else as well. It's going to be cool to see him back in the Bronx tomorrow. Now, with that said, because we're doing our full series preview here, and then we'll get into the five takeaways. We'll have our watch parties, but just to give it some more analysis, quote unquote, for the first three series. And by analysis, I mean looking at the MLB at bat matchup stat lines against Severino since he has departed. Well, some of these numbers will be overall, but like Judge, for example, five at bats versus Sevy, he's hitting 600. What's that? 3 for 5 with a homer, 4 RBIs. Some other numbers. Let's see here. Well, Jazz Chisholm Jr., I can't recall if this took place while Jazz was a Yankee or whatever. Anyways, in 11 at-bats, Jazz against Sevy hitting 455 with 2 homers. Goldschmidt, 5 at-bats, hitting 400 with a homer. Randall Grichuk off Sevy hitting 333 in 6 at-bats, so what's that, 2 for 6 with a homer. Those stats may have been from when Grichuk was with the Blue Jays, like, I don't know, 2017, 2018. But anyways, Stan has yet to face Sevy. But Judge has hit him well. Bellinger is 3 for 9. Jazz, as we mentioned, hitting 455 in 11 at-bats with 2 homers. So in some limited amount of, a small sample size, they've hit Severino pretty well. And as for Jeffrey Springs, not too much data to go off of. It looks like only a handful of at-bats the Yankees have had, and nobody's really hit him all that well. And then we know Ryan Weathers will be going for us on Thursday in that series finale. But yeah, excited for Sevy's return tomorrow. As for tonight, the Yankees have hit Savali well. We know what Cam's all about. Should be a W. I know it's baseball. But in the end, got to win this series. Not going to bank on a sweep. Not ever really banking on a sweep. You know, that's where, not to keep going back to that line, but it's predicting a sweep is just kind of like, it just goes against how baseball works. So I almost will never do it. But you got to win this series. And we enter play 7-2, 2.5 game lead in the East. And then come Friday, while it's, long term, you're not looking at the Rays as a serious threat. Maybe they're not going to be the worst team in the AL East, though. They might be the fourth best team in the East with the Red Sox 5. I don't think that's going to be how it plays out long term. But in the end, it's a divisional matchup. Our first of the year. Our first divisional matchup of the year come Friday. So you just want to keep the momentum, want to keep the vibes high. And again, while the Blue Jays, while they are in this little rough patch, which I think will inevitably end at some point, and it could end starting tonight, who knows, or it could last the rest of April, take advantage of it while it's happening. Because in the end, you still got to bank on that's what it will be come season's end. Yankees, Blue Jays, who's winning the AL East? Because nobody's really impressed, honestly, not just in the East, but in the American League as a whole, man. I mean, you look at, let's just go through the standings really quick throughout the rest of the league. Well, in the East, we mentioned the Blue Jays are 4-6. They're in fourth place, tied with the Orioles, who have not looked great either, who are 4-6. And by the way, I was talking to Jolly Olive yesterday, and apparently, I haven't read this myself, but I take his word for it. The Orioles have tinkered with Alonso's stance for some reason. And not that there's a correlation here, but you look at the highest reduction in bat speed for any player, Alonso is towards the top of the list. In bat speed, they talk about you don't need a large sample size to kind of set in stone the difference from, a year-over-year decline or improvement in bat speed. And apparently Alonso's is, like, significantly down. And the Orioles made a change to his stance. Jolly was telling me somewhat about it. It was, I don't think they made him more open or put him further back from the plate. I don't know why they did that with Alonso. Not saying that's going to mean he's going to be bad. Anyways, the Orioles are 4-6. The Rays are 5-5. Boston's 2-8, and we're 7-2. But as for the rest of the AL, I mean, in the Central, the Guardians are, they're in first place, but they're only 6-5. The Royals are 500. The Twins, they're not going to be good. They're 4-6. The Tigers have been disappointing. I was talking to Norp yesterday. He's pretty disappointed with his little Tigers. They're 4-6. The White Sox, shout out to them. I might be shouting them out the whole year because if we win the AL East by one game, not saying we will win the AL East, but if we were to, we got to make sure we remember to thank the Chicago White Sox for sweeping Toronto this past weekend. They're 4-6. Anyways, that's neither here nor there, but like the AL West, the Mariners are 4-7. The A's, well, we don't know if they're going to win the division or be a true playoff contender. So far, they're 3-6. You expected more out of them than what we've seen so far. I know it's early. Obviously, it's early, but this is all we got to judge our opinions off of right now. And so far, nobody's really stood out in the American League as like, oh, they're looking good. That could change instantly. That could change starting tonight. And of course, when I say that, I'm saying with the exception of the New York Yankees, with the exception of Sunday, we played some damn good baseball. Really, really good baseball. So whether it's with the Blue Jays or just relative to the entire league, because we want to win, we want to have the number one seed. And one of the stats that I don't even talk about enough, you look like Aaron Boone's postseason track record is, for, rightfully so, talked about a lot, as in we haven't won. Take a look at how the Yankees have performed when they have home field advantage, though. I don't think they've lost a series in the postseason having home field advantage. We haven't had it enough, though. So it's pivotal that we win the East for obvious reasons, but just the American, like, we got to get the one seed. So while it's something to stress about right now, if anything, if you are concerned about it, like I guess I am, and when I say concerned, I'm saying just keep my eye on it. So far, so good. They're doing what I'm asking, but we got to keep that going. And while nobody's jumping out to a good star besides us, you want to keep that going and take advantage of it while you can, particularly with the Blue Jays in the East. As for the National League, the Dodgers are 8-2. Talked about them just putting a beat down on the Blue Jays last night. Brewers are 8-2. The Reds are off to a nice start, 7-3. And then the NL East, you have the Phillies 6-4, Marlins 6-4, Mets 6-4. Who really cares about the National League? I'm very much an old-timey baseball fan, yo. I understand interleague play. I understand the whole, marketability of it and the balanced schedule. It's similar to me with the pitch clock. I don't love the pitch clock because I miss when games like weren't 2.5 hours. I actually like when games are 4 hours, but I can recognize it's a W for Major League Baseball. That's kind of how I feel about interleague play and the balanced schedule. I get why they do it, and I think it is good for the game. Me personally, I miss when, I mean, I never was a part of, you know, the baseball watching world when it was no interleague play, because that was before I was born. I think that started in, what, 98, if I'm not mistaken? But I would go back to those days, honestly. I wish it was just, you're playing your league, and the only time you're facing an NL team is if you match up in the World Series. I think that would be awesome. But that's probably, you know, a little ridiculous to have that still be the case, which, of course, they've since changed it, and they've changed it even more with the balanced schedule. I'm not a fan of the balanced schedule. I miss playing a... How many times have we used to play our interdivision teams? 18 times a year? 18 games we would have against each divisional opponent, if I'm not mistaken? And then you would play the rest of the American League. I think it was 12 times. And, you know, there'd be interleague play here and there, but it wasn't as frequent. I miss playing majority of our games. Majority of our series would always be against your league and a majority of them against your division. I kind of miss those days, I'm not going to lie. But I don't know how I got to talking about that. But, yeah. Yankees A's starts tonight. Reminder, we'll be live on the main channel, Yankees Avenue, for all three games. We'll probably be live tonight starting around, like, I don't know, 6:50, 6:55, something along those lines. Another reminder, tomorrow's game, while game one and game three are on YES, game two is on Amazon Prime. So just keep that in mind. But yeah, Cam versus Aaron Civale tonight. But let's get into some early takeaways from the Yankees' first 2 weeks. Now again, well, I guess a couple of these are a little bit obvious. I do want to continue to talk about them, though, especially the first one. But I'm not mentioning, like, Cam Slit in this regard or, like, the Yankees starting rotation. There's going to be other takeaways that are not mentioned here, but these are just the ones, like, I want to talk about today. So it's five takeaways. There's 10 to 20 you could have. But these are the five we are going to go over today. And I do want to start with the bullpen, which, you know, we've had this conversation plenty of times. It's been well-documented throughout the entire offseason that this is not even just the people that were complaining about running it back or had an issue with every little thing the Yankees did this offseason. Even somebody like me, who you could say is a shill, and I will not go against that, I even have been saying the bullpen is lacking an arm. And in a way, it comes from an area where I want to compliment the Yankees because they're so reliant on their ability to turn nothing to something. And a lot of times they do that. And we might be seeing more of that this year still. Like, both can be true. The Yankees' bullpen isn't deep enough, but they're also possibly hitting on some guys that we hope they would hit on. I mean, Brent Hedrick has looked terrific so far this year. He really, really has, and the Yankees like him. The Yankees have liked him for a while. A lot of people in baseball have liked Brent Hedrick. I was just BSing, speaking of Jolly Olive, I was BSing with him like a month or two ago. I honestly didn't even think Jolly knew the name Brent Hedrick. But, you know, Jolly knows ball, so shout out to him. But I was saying to him, just like BS and just being, you know, when I'm in the office, I hardcore turn on like bit mode shill. Like, it is 27 rings when I'm in the office type thing. And I was saying, I'm like, Ujali, you ought to put Brent Hedrick on your fantasy team, bro. He's going to be good. And I'm literally just like BS. And he's like, oh, no, like Brent Hedrick is one of my bullpen candidates to break out this year in baseball. I'm like, word? All right, bet. But no, he's looked really good. Jake Bird, I'm still going to mention in this regard, outside of the outing of the day, and this remains to be seen, and his next outing is going to be a big one in terms of how we feel about him. Jake Bird, I'll still put in that category of he might be a reliever. Yeah, the Yankees are going to hit on. I honestly, even Paul Blackburn has looked pretty decent, but both things can be true. The Yankees are possibly hitting on some of those relievers, as they often do, but we're still lacking depth in this bullpen. And yesterday we talked about it with Cadwin Quest a lot. You know, the bullpen has fell one man short. And we really are one man short because we have a guy in the bullpen who is not an option out of the bullpen. Cadwin Quest has yet to pitch, and we know he's going away on Friday, but I wish the Yankees, and maybe this could happen today, I don't know. I mean, say they know, all right, we're just going to lose the rights on Cadwin Quest because, you know, he's a Rule 5 draft pick, and with Heel coming back, you know when Quest is going to be gone. I would just kind of cut bait now if you know you're going to lose him and bring up, like, Yerry De Los Santos or bring up whoever it may be. Because, again, the bullpen has felt one man short. And that's something, come the deadline, will 100% be addressed. And we'll talk a little bit more about this come topic five or takeaway number five, which I kind of spoil what my takeaways are. But don't be, you know, completely misled by some of the taglines here. Like, topic four, I'm sure you guys are all going to love. But there's more to talk about with it than just Trent Grisham. Because I was criticizing Grisham yesterday, but we'll get to that in a moment. I wonder, well, there's a few solutions here. One is the trade deadline, which that box I almost consider to be already checked in terms of how I feel it's going to go down. The Yankees will take care of the bullpen come the deadline. That's a ways away. And what we're just talking about, taking advantage of the American League not looking so great so far, the Blue Jays' early struggles, these games are very important. So, you know, the fact that we are going to show up the bullpen, I'm sure, come the deadline doesn't help us right now. Now, what could help us right now is what we just talked about with Conquest, getting another arm in here and not just having a wasted roster spot. But also, we're not at this point yet. I don't think we're near this point yet. They want him to be a starter. But at some point, Carlos LeGrande will be here this year. I and many others are almost certain of that at some point. And particularly the long-term plan come the postseason, I think we will be seeing LeGrande. The situation is not even nearly dire enough for that to be a thing where it's like, all right, we got to get him up now. But it is still something to keep in the back of our minds and not, you know, not let it slip away because we're far removed from spring training. And as we go on and on here, LeGrande made himself a factor ASAP as a reliever this year and an option that the Yankees can go to really whenever they want. When will that time be? I would imagine probably not until June, maybe not even until July or August. But at some point, I think he will be up. But you figure in the meantime, that's not going to happen. That doesn't help us right now. I think our next best bet, besides when Quest being gone, and well, even that, because Heel's coming back on Friday, so that's that roster spot, so let's forget that. Maybe in the meantime, we get, I don't know, when Quest DFA today, Yerry brought up, something along those lines. But our next best bet for a difference in the bullpen really is just, and this is significant, but when Rodon comes back or Cole comes back, the hamstring issue seems to like not really be too much of an issue at all with Rodon. The rehab start probably is going to be coming within like the next couple weeks, maybe in the next like week and a half. Once he returns, which let's just say it's first week in May. Well, then, you know, at this point, you kind of just, if we're playing along with how it's looked so far, Warren looks great. Weathers, while by no means should we make judgments off of two starts, regardless, when Rodon comes back, Weathers is going to the bullpen, you figure. And that's something that can absolutely make a big difference. I mean, whether it be just his stuff, the way it'll translate to the pen, I think quite well. Definitely do want a more, you know, reliable put-away pitch. We know the fastball can be really good. The changeup has looked really good. I want him to throw that sweeper more. I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees, like, I don't know, whether it's like, just tinker with him a little bit as we get near whenever that day does come where Rodon's back and he goes to the bullpen. I think there's maybe something lacking with, like, the breaking ball there. He could use a two-strike pitch to really put hitters away, especially come the time where he goes to the bullpen, but that'll help us out a lot. And then you get to, let's just say that, you know, the relative long-term picture come July when, all right, you got Rodon back, you got Cole back, and let's just say we got everybody healthy that we plan to be healthy, which the odds of that happening are slim, but whatever. That then involves, all right, you've already put Weathers in the bullpen. Warren's going to go to the bullpen at some point too, and I think his stuff will translate well to the bullpen. So not to get too far down the weeds here, but or into the weeds here, down the road, whatever. Weathers, we know, will at some point go to the pen. That'll help out a lot. Warren, at some point, more so way down the road, will go to the pen. That'll help out a lot. And then you have LeGrandhe going to get called up at some point, you figure. And then you have the trade deadline. So the bullpen will be taken care of. I don't worry about that. Like, come the postseason, we're going to be in a great spot with our bullpen. And the Yankees know that's an area. I mean, I would assume they know that, because come upgrades to be made, it's the first thing you think of outside the bottom third of the order. But in regards to what's more upgradable, easy to fix, it's the bullpen rather than, you know, if you want to go out and get a third baseman, all right, there's so many decisions that go into that. One, who's available? Two, I mean, McMahon signed through next year. Like, are we talking cut and bait? Which I don't think they would do that. No, they wouldn't do that. But whatever. Let's just leave it there. I'm not worried about the bullpen long term, because I think it'll be taken care of for everything we just mentioned. In the meantime, though, it's not deep enough. And I would like to think, I don't think this will happen, but if it were up to me, if you know Caban Quest is gone, unless he's really, really like his arm, which if so, all right, purchase his rights from the Cardinals then. Like, you can do some things with the Rule 5 draft picks where you, like, acquire his full rights to where you can, like, keep him in your system and not have to send him back because he's not on the big league roster. But let's just say they know, all right, Caban Quest lost cause, we're going to lose him. Get rid of him now and call up Yair De Los Santos or something along those lines. Like, get another, make, our bullpen is legitimately one man short right now because of Winquest. And it's already not deep enough. So that is something we knew going into this year, and that is an issue. As we kind of talked about yesterday, that remains. But no doubt about it, that's a takeaway to discuss so far. Ben Rice, listen, I don't know which angle I want to take with this conversation. I have a couple questions laid out to discuss. One is just like, if you believe what this is with Ben Rice, what he's doing is legit, then let's have this conversation. Where does he rank best first baseman in baseball? Now, obviously, there's more to be done, like, set in stone, putting the numbers up, and it becomes official. He is now had enough at-bats to where you could say, all right, he is up there. But let's just say this is who Ben Rice is, which everything we have seen with the numbers he put up last year and the bad luck he had last year while still being a top 10 hitter in the American League by WRC+. And then this year, the way he looks, I mean, I think no doubt about it, we're looking at the top five first baseman in baseball. And I was reading Chris Kirschner's article of The Athletic last night, of course. You know, something with Rice in 2025 was he was great, but he did not do great against off-speed pitches. And that was not something I was worried about because, you know, prior to 2025, in 2024, he struggled a lot against fastballs. Well, last year, he raked against fastballs. Well, this year, so last year, 691 OPS against all off-speed pitches. So non-fastballs, 691 OPS last year. So far this year, early sample size, obviously. But he's posted a 1.351 OPS against non-fastballs. And that is with Ben Rice, one of the most encouraging things. And you can apply this to the defense, which we've seen. I think not only is he looking more confident at the position with Scoots, he actually looks good defensively at first base. But he seems to learn quick. We know this kid is smart. I don't know how much a role that actually plays in, you know, the evolution of a pro ball player. I'm sure it plays a role, a large role. And with Rice, remember, he comes up as a catcher. He was learning first base. And while there were issues last year, people want to see him improve, well, he has improved, and he's improved substantially. 2024, couldn't hit fastballs. Last year, crushed him. Last year, couldn't hit off-speed pitches. So far this year, in small sample size, he's crushing them. He learns quick. He gets better quick. And the guy we're already at right now, so if we're to discuss this as kind of like the floor for Ben Rice. Not the floor, but just like at the very least who he is, which is somebody I think perennial 900 OPS guy at this point. Is he a top five first baseman in baseball? Yes. I think so. I mean, let me know your rankings down below. I'm trying to, like, who would be considered the number one? Is it still like, let me just look up like top five first baseman in baseball. Then I also wonder about an extension for Ben Rice. So if you go to, like, shout out Draft Neck Mark, his top five first baseman going into 2026, he had, I'm not sure if this is the order he had, but he put Freddie Freeman, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Matt Olson, Bryce Harper, and Pete Alonso. I'll tell you this. I won't put him ahead of Freeman just yet, no. I won't put him ahead of Vlad just yet. Although those two, we could tackle those eventually. Matt Olson, at least just talking offensively, I think Ben Rice is a better hitter than Matt Olson. Matt Olson's pretty damn good. I think Ben Rice is better. Pete Alonso, I think Ben Rice is better. In fact, I know Ben Rice is better. I'm just being humble. Say you were to ask non-biased baseball fans, you know, because you ask us, I think many of us, including myself, can be biased here. I recognize that. But if you were just be like, all right, you're building a team, which first baseman do you want? Freddie Freeman over Ben Rice? Sure. I could 100% forgive that. I could understand that. Vlad over Ben Rice? Sure. 100%. The only reason I say sure is like, I think this is going to be set in stone quickly soon. That's what we're going to start seeing with Rice. You know, I have the tagline here is Ben Rice is a superstar. What I mean by that is not just his production, but it's like we're going to hear it being talked about a lot throughout baseball. Ben Rice is a name, and he's going to become even more of a name. But Freeman, Vlad, no. But I think he's better than Olson. I think he should be considered a better first baseman right now than Bryce Harper and Pete Alonso. The other conversation, the question I have, just kind of let me know in the chat what you think, but we haven't seen the Yankees extend one of their guys since when they did Seve for 4 years, Aaron Hicks for 7 years. And, you know, those, particularly Aaron Hicks deal, didn't work out. But the process was correct. It just, you know, an unfortunate outcome. Ben Rice is somebody that if the Yankees are willing to dip back into those waters of extending a guy early, not saying you got to do it right now because he still has, you know, plenty of years of control, but he's 27 years old. Would the Yankees consider a deal that locks him up through, you know, age 33? And buys out, like, the last few years of his arbitration, of course, or all of his arbitration years, and then the first, like, 3 years of when he would be a free agent. I mean, with anybody, if there were to be a no-brainer on the team right now, Rice would be the guy to do that with. And I actually think it might be possible with him because he's so good, and I think they like everything to do with, like, his makeup, how he acts, who he is. Ben Rice is awesome. Homegrown, lefty-hitting first baseman, high socks, hits tanks, hits the crap out of the ball. What we're seeing right now is what a lot of us predicted, not just a couple years ago when he was raking the minor leagues, but with the expected numbers last year, despite some really bad luck, it was still an awesome season for him. I think we're looking at one of the best first basemen in baseball, and that has started now. We're seeing it right now. Superstar in the making, on the verge of being a superstar, Ben Rice. All right, this is an interesting one. We know Caballeros has struggled offensively at shortstop. We've talked about the defense. I don't want to do too much in regards to that because I feel like we've discussed at length now that a lot of double plays we've seen, we question, do they get turned with Volpe? And the infield defense at the middle has looked pretty damn good together as like a double play combo. Now, Caballeros' throws haven't been great, but I'm going to assume Caballero is a good defender because that's what we've seen. Larger sample size says he is a good defender. This year, the throws have been weird. Like, I still look at McMahon as a good defender, but his throws have been weird. I could put that to the side. Caballero has not hit, though. He has not hit really at all. And while the at-bats haven't looked as bad as Ryan McMahon's, it does have me wondering, I'm gonna put this, like, not necessarily looking forward to Volpe's return, but I'm curious. Can I say that? I'm curious because let's imagine a world where Volpe can get back to his 2024 defense, which was truly elite. Well, offensively, Volpe probably is our best bet at shortstop. And I don't even think I should say probably. I mean, he is. We talk about the bottom third of the order. Austin Wells, that's not a spring training conversation about possible improvement. The year three breakout, will that finally happen this year? You hope. McMahon, little bit. I'm starting to wonder, all right, McMahon, just it may just not work out here offensively. Not set in stone, and, you know, he had a good couple good walks and had a hit the other day. We'll let that play out. We'll continue to monitor the situation. But, like, with Caballero, if you were somebody that would be saying, you know, he probably just isn't that good a hitter, I think there's a good chance you might be right. So with that in mind, at the very least, I'll tell you, I find myself wondering about Volpe and his return. Like, what if the defense is good to where, all right, in that regard, we can consider them somewhat on a level playing field, Caballero and Volpe. Can Volpe be better enough offensively to where we as fans consider it a clear choice that, all right, this is the guy we should run out at shortstop? And it seems no matter what, that is going to be the case. He will get run. And when he returns, like, he will be the Yankees starting shortstop. I guess what I'm saying here is Caballero struggles, and the fact of, you know, you haven't seen Volpe in a minute, you know, you don't miss something until it's gone. And I'm not saying I miss Volpe at all, but this guy was supposed to be really good. He was a top five prospect in baseball just a few years ago, and I was excited about him then. And the conversation we're talking about right now is very much revolving around upside. So going back to that, like, I do find myself wondering, all right, could this be the year? Not that he breaks out, not that he's, like, him being one of the best shorts in baseball, that is not even in the thought process whatsoever with Volpe. Could we finally get the 700 OPS season maybe out of Volpe? I think you can wonder about that. I think that you can dream upon that. And if that's the case, compared to what Caballero is doing right now, which, you know, Caballero won't always be this bad offensively. And there's other aspects of his game that he still clears Volpe. I mean, I think no matter what, Caballero is the more sure thing defensively at shortstop as of right now. He's a better base runner. He's a better base stealer. Offensively, though, which is what this conversation is about, it won't take much for Volpe to be better than Caballero. And then what if we do finally get the quote-unquote best year of his career, which would only mean a OPS, yeah, hitting 700 for once. At the very least, it'll be a conversation. It's something I'm wondering. I find myself, again, the word I'm using is like curious about, all right, like let's see what Volpe is when he returns. I find myself kind of getting to that point. And his rehab assignment should be starting soon. He's going to need a good amount of at-bats, though, so I wouldn't bank on him being back until, yeah, like first week in May. But we'll see. Same deal. We'll continue to monitor that situation. Let's move on to the next one. Now, this one I have titled as Bring Back Grisham Was Smart. Now, the reason I say this is entirely due to Jason Dominguez and his defense. We've seen him continue to look like a guy who just can't play the outfield in AAA. Now, we know he's raking down there, and Jason the hitter, I the utmost faith in. He rakes against righties. That is already certified. He had a 118 WRC plus against right-handed pitching last year. He has to improve against lefties. He seemingly is starting to do that a little bit in AAA. The defense, though, is just not big league ready, and it's so unfortunate. It's frustrating. I don't understand. But whether you want it to be, it was smart bringing Grisham back. I know not everybody loves Grisham, and for the first time, I did not like his at-bats on Sunday. But he's been getting on base, and I'm glad we brought him back in particular. But from a general standpoint, Jason wasn't ready. We needed to get an outfielder in here. So whether it was bring Grisham back, or if somebody else wanted, you know, if one of you guys wanted to sign Harrison Bader, that two-year deal the Giants did, bringing an outfielder in here was crucial because Jason just flat out wasn't ready. And in regards to Grisham in particular, bringing him back and having him play center field, well, then you also have Bellinger in left instead of center, which Bellinger can play center. He's a better left fielder, though. That is his best position. So defensively, we are in a much better spot because we brought Grisham back, and his defense seems to be back to where it used to be. Prior to the hamstring injuries in center field, he's looked really good. You also have Bellinger in left instead of Bellinger in center, Jason in left. I mean, that would have been, if not by now, it eventually would have been a disaster. And I think we're starting to get to that point. Like, if we don't start hearing and seeing just true consistency in the outfield for Jason at AAA, he is just going to be a DH then. And that's going to be when Stanton's hurt or when, I don't know, I mean, next year is Stanton's last year. Do we just wait till he's gone for Jason to be an everyday player? I don't think that'll be the case. But he might just not be an outfielder. And as of right now, the Yankees would not be as good of a team if Jason was playing left field. Maybe their offense would be a little bit better. I think, yeah, although I have upside hopes about Grisham and his ability to come close to replicating what he did last year. I'm not sure about the power, but he's getting on base. He's always had a great eye. And the defense we just talked about. Offensively, sure, we'd be a little bit better. Yeah, I think Jason is fantastic, as we know, against right-handed pitching. We would be a worse team right now if he was starting every day in left field. Like, we just would be. He can't play the field. And it's a shame. He might just be a DH. So for that reason alone, I think bringing back Grisham was smart. But generally speaking, just bringing back or bringing in an outfielder was the way to go. And again, Grisham's been getting on base, and the defense looks good. Jason frustrates because I love him so much, and he's a great hitter. I think he's going to be just fine against left-handed pitching. He might just be a DH, though. And if we hadn't brought Grisham back or brought in an outfielder, he'd be playing left, and I think there'd be many complaints already by now, 2 weeks in. Anyways, last one. This is the year to make a splash. Running it back, I think, was absolutely the right decision. I like this team a lot, and I'm very encouraged by many of the things we've seen. We know there are holes, though, as we've talked about for a couple days now, with the bullpen, bottom third of the order. Going back to like a spring training conversation we had a lot about the circumstances of why it's so important to win this year, whether you bring up the Lockett or not, Judge is getting older. If there is no baseball next year, by the time we see him next, would be 2030, that'd be a long-ass lockout, 2028, And Judge would be turning 36 that April. He's turning 34 in a couple weeks. And like, not to sound like a, not to use like a TikTok word here, but Yankee fans are just like, I was going to say Yankee fans are tired, but I couldn't really say that with a straight face. But it's gone on long enough, and you have a chance this year. This is the best squad of the Judge era. And with all the circumstances we know about, everybody getting older, I think the American League being not wide open, but open, this is the year to do it. Go out and make a splash. Now, who could that be? I don't know. There's one name that comes to mind, bullpen-wise. If the Padres are out of it come July, make just about everybody available for Mason Miller. Just about everybody. Now, I know there's untouchables. I don't think Yanks will ever trade Lombard. LeGrande, no. But what if it were to take LeGrande? Would you do it? I actually think it's something you should consider just for Mason Miller. I think that would be the splash of all splashes. And that requires a lot of things. That requires the Yankees to be willing to depart with many and, you know, certain prospects they like and we like and we love. The Padres being out of it. The Padres being out of it and still willing to even have that conversation, which who knows if they will. But they're seemingly always ready to do business. And, you know, they. I hope Ryan Cohen's not listening. But that's just one name. Like a move like that, this is the year to not unload the farm, but make sure you do tap into the farm and shore up the holes. And in regards to the bullpen in that hole, well, everything we just talked about before with Weathers will go to the bullpen, Warren at some point should go to the bullpen, you have LeGrand to call up, he's, let's just say, not involved in if this deal were to go down, and then you add Mason Miller on top of that. I mean, that's, then we're really talking about a team that can finally get it done. But just generally speaking, I mean, if there is a third baseman available, We listen, at shortstop, we know the Yankees talked to the Rangers about Corey Seager this winter. If that's something that becomes a possibility again and it makes sense, I actually like where his contract is at. You know, he's still pretty young and he doesn't have that many. I think he has like 6 years left, including this year on his deal. I don't want to get into specifics just yet, but if something like that is available, this is the year to make a splash. We'll see where the team's at come that time in July when the deadline's approaching. But for now, like, this does seem like a really well put together team with some holes, some flaws, some things you want to see, you know, cleaned up and all that and improved upon. But not to pull out a line I often do, but I think this has a chance of being the team. And you got to make sure come the deadline, you ensure that that is 100% the case, that you're going all in, which is why I say this is the year to make a splash. And by that, I mean, if there's a name available, go get it done. You have the prospects. You have plenty of prospects to get to make one of these deals, a big-time acquisition this July, and still have the future corner pieces that you are banking on right now still around because you have so much depth, whether it be the pitching prospects or you guys know how I feel about Lombard. I like Lombard a lot, but I like Dax Kilby a lot too. And I've often said, I would make Lombard expendable because you have Dax Kilby. Well, we can kind of, you know, reverse that a little bit. All right, you like Lombard so much, maybe make Dax Kilby available. I mean, if Dax Kilby was the roadblock to you getting Mason Miller or not in a package with the Padres, if that were to be available, you do it. You got to do it. Because then you still would have your future shortstop in Lombard. If a trade arises that makes sense for Elmer Rodriguez to go, you do it. Because you still have Carlos LeGrande. You still have all these other, you know, we're in a position where we can trade from a surplus of prospects in depth. Because of that surplus, we're not totally gutted when you come out of it. And then you give yourself the best chance possible to win it all this year. So those are not the five takeaways from this season, but five of my takeaways to begin this season. 2 weeks in, very small sample size, I know, but as we always talk about, this is all we got to operate. Who's ringing my door? Who is buzzing my door at 8:50 on a Tuesday morning? I didn't order nothing, so you ain't getting let in. Anyways, that is going to do it for this episode of the Morning Yankee Show. As always, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Reminder, we are also on Spotify and Apple. Leave a like, subscribe if you are new. If you guys could please leave a like on the stream. That does help out a lot. Of course, as I mentioned, we'll be live for all three games against the Oakland A's on the main channel for watch parties. Tonight, you got Cam Schlitler versus Aaron Civale. Tomorrow, Will Warren versus Luis Severino returning to the Bronx for the first time as an opponent. Ryan Weathers versus Jeffrey Springs, battle of the left-handers on Thursday afternoon. Tonight, though, every game in the series will be live for the watch party. Tonight will probably be live right around 6:50 on the main channel. I got to run, got to get into the Big Apple. Recorded baseball today at 10:30, so got to run. Thank you guys so much for being here. I think that's all I got. See you guys later on the main channel for the watch party. Enjoy your Tuesday, and let's go Yanks.